I know a certain Jesuit priest, and whenever he proclaims the gospel, he almost always begins his homily with, "This is a very disturbing reading." This morning, I wholeheartedly concur. This is a very disturbing reading. What in the world is Jesus up to? Let's just start with the first line. "I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing." I remember many years ago being on retreat, reading a book about the desert mothers and fathers, and coming across this story. Abba Lot went to see Abba Joseph and said, "Abba, as much as I'm able, I practice a small rule, a little fasting, some prayer and meditation, and remain quiet. And as much as possible, I keep my thoughts clean. What else should I do?" Then the old man stood up and stretched out his hands toward heaven, and his fingers became like 10 torches of fire. And he said, "If you wish, you can become all flame." And I literally threw the book across the room, clearly not destined to be a desert mother. But suppose that is what Jesus is up to. What if the fire Jesus has come to set on earth has to do with each of us living with passion and intensity, the way Abba Joseph certainly was, flames shooting out of his fingers? Who has the stamina required for that? Honestly, most days I'm just trying not to have a mental breakdown on Muni, trying to be patient with my aging mother, trying not to cry at the front desk where I work when something pulls at my heart. But it is a little haunting to imagine the possibility of being all flame. The Spanish poet Juan Ramon Jimenez said, "In this world, we have to burn complete, resolve ourselves fully, each one in the flames and the resolution appropriate to her." In this world, we have to burn complete, resolve ourselves fully, each one in the flames and the resolution appropriate to him. Norman Morrison was a Quaker living in Baltimore, and at the age of 31, he doused himself in kerosene and set himself on fire below Robert McNamara's Pentagon office, the current Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War. He was married with 2 daughters and a son. And yet for Norman Morrison, what was happening in Vietnam was so disturbing, so unsettling, so haunting, that this was the action he felt compelled to take. Now, I don't think Jesus is asking us to do that. But I'm quite sure what Jesus is asking us of us requires enormous courage. In our psalm today, we hear, "My soul is consumed with longing for your ordinances at all times." My soul is consumed with longing for your ordinances at all times. Consume is one of those words which has multiple meanings. Destroy completely, use up, engage fully. No matter how you look at the definition, it would seem that the soul is meant to be completely engaged with God, first and foremost. Which brings us beautifully to the rest of our reading. "Do you think that I have come to establish peace on the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. A father will be divided against his son, a son against his father, a mother against her daughter, a daughter against her mother." And elsewhere in the New Testament, Jesus is equally clear. "Anyone who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." And so again, I ask the question, what is Jesus up to? In the Gospel of Luke, where our reading comes from, there are some compelling moments that precede this one. In chapter 7, Jesus raises up the only son of a poor widow in name, giving the son back to his mother. In chapter 8, Jesus raises up the young daughter of the Roman official Jairus, restoring her to her grieving family. But also in chapter 8, when Jesus is told that his mother and brothers are waiting nearby to see him, eager to speak with him, Jesus replies, "My mother and my brothers are those who hear the word of God and act upon it." My mother and my brothers are those who hear the word of God and act upon it. My soul is consumed with longing for your ordinances at all times. There is a scene in Steven Spielberg's film Lincoln when Robert Lincoln, the eldest son of the president, angrily declares to his father that he is going to enlist in the Union Army rather than return to college. To which his father equally angry declares that as the commander-in-chief, he forbids Robert to do any such thing. But Robert, agitated and defiant, stands firm in his resolve. He knows he will never be the man his father is, but he has a burning desire to do something meaningful, to be used. He has no desire to be protected or spared. In this world, we have to burn complete, resolve ourselves fully, each one in the flames and the resolution appropriate to him. We must let our children be who they are, who God created them to be. Annie Lamott says, "It is a violation of trust to use your kids as caulking for the cracks in you."
Say that again, please.
It is a violation of trust to use your kids as a caulking for the cracks in you. If I may return to my Jesuit, who I mentioned in the beginning of my message, in his mid-40s, after securing a PhD in physics from Stanford University and living a relatively comfortable life of ministry in the peninsula, he discerned a call to become an army chaplain in Iraq when things were very volatile in that region. I didn't know Tim well, but I imagine that his decision did not please everyone close to him, least of all his family. I believe most parents simply want their children to be happy. But what if there is more to life than that? What do we make of Catherine of Siena saying, "If you are who you are meant to be, you will set the world on fire"? If you are who you are meant to be, you will set the world on fire. Our parents give us life, and it is a very great gift indeed. But perhaps the gift we give our parents, and more particularly our Creator, is to be who we are meant to be, which may be mysterious to everyone around us, possibly even to ourselves. And yet deep down, we know what it is which calls us forward. Someone I have admired for many years is Joan of Arc, and there is no doubt hers is an exceptional story. Against all odds, an illiterate peasant girl successfully leads an army in France to several important victories during the Hundred Years' War, culminating in the coronation of Charles VII. What intrigues me about Joan is her wholeheartedness, her absolute certainty in the authenticity of her voices and what they called her to do, and of course her courage. Not so much her courage in battle, though that was by all counts remarkable, but the courage she had to unearth during her long imprisonment and her agonizing death by fire. Let me then conclude with a poem about Joan. Fire will not leave this story. It crackles along the edges, singes the ceiling and the walls, rises up along a plain wooden stake, a human torch. A young farm girl becomes a human torch because she will not back down, will not turn away, will not deny herself or her God, will not take the easy way out, will not live the rest of her life imprisoned, will not stop, will not stop, will not stop. She will go forward into her red glory. Blessed be.